Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, July 4th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Well, not exactly. And not exactly from the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. In fact, I'm in my basement, broadcasting, not even live, to tape to you on this July 4th. Happy Independence Day, folks. Happy Independence Day. I am on vacation, as you may or may not know, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to get great content today. Of course you will, because I give it to you almost every single day. In fact, I do. Every single day of the week. Today on the program, Justin Krebs of Drinking Liberally, from an interview I did with him at Netroots Nation, and Jay Tomlinson from Best of the Left podcast with David Pakman from the David Pakman Show. Both of these guys, young guys, doing a great podcast, so I thought you might want to be introduced to them. And I am now, my daughter is here. Mila, do you want to say hello to everybody? Pretend that it's 4th of July, so say hello to everybody. Don't dilly-dally, because this is, you know.
Hello.
Say happy 4th of July. Believe me.
Happy 4th of July.
Yeah, happy 4th of July, everybody. And make sure you tune in for the rest of the week.
And my name is Mila.
And her name is Mila. And make sure you tune in for the rest of the week. You'll be hearing Shannon Moore from Alaska. Hold on, Mila. Stop, please. Just give me 1 second. You'll be hearing Shannon Moore from Alaska, Rick Jacobs from the Courage Campaign.
I love you.
And Mila loves you. And
I love them, not you.
All right. And the director.
Oh,
well, thank you, sweetie. That's very nice. And the director of Hot Coffee, as well as Senator Al Franken, Marcos Melitzis, and some foreign bloggers, well, John Aravosis of America Blog, all coming this week. So enjoy this show. Okay, hold on for a second now. All right, folks, enjoy. Okay, so. Talking to folks here at Netroots Nation 2011, I am very happy to welcome back to the program Justin Krebs, who is from Drinking Liberally, Laughing Liberally, Living Liberally. There's a lot of other liberally activated groups around the country. Justin, welcome.
Thank you, Sam.
What do you guys do? I mean, it's just a drinking club or what? What's the theory behind it?
It's just a drinking club.
No.
But the theory is that when liberals get together in a social setting without necessarily having an agenda, without necessarily having to pay dues or have guest speakers, they can learn from each other. They can reaffirm each other's values. They can make each other feel more comfortable in their liberal identity. They can get recruited into campaigns. And we just think there needs to be a social entry point into politics and a social and cultural level where our political identities really become part of our everyday lives.
Now, how many chapters across the country does you guys have been around now for 7 years?
8 years.
Eight years?
We started right after the Iraq War in 2003. Hopefully we'll be running after that war still at, you know, ends, right. But it's going for now. We're at 250 chapters of Drinking Liberally, which are our happy hours, taking place in big towns, small towns, red states, blue states, in almost all 50 states. And then we also have Laughing Liberally comedy shows, Screening Liberally films, and other liberally groups in the Living Liberally constellation.
And, of course, people can go to the drinkingliberally.org.
You can go to drinkingliberally.org, livingliberally.org. They're all connected. And that on drinkingliberally.org, the first thing you'll see is a map, and you can find a chapter near you. And if there isn't one, it's free and easy to start.
You know, I have to say that I know the effectiveness of your organization firsthand, both from the perspective of what we did on Air America, the first time that we did a live show on the Majority Report on the Air America, covering the Republican National Convention, was at an event set up by Drinking Liberally. And I have people who to this day come up to me and say, the first time I ever heard about you guys was when I saw you at the Republican National Convention at the Tank at the time in New York City. And so it's a very effective. I mean, tell me about the I want to hear a little bit more about the theory when you started this.
Well, exactly what you just identified, that people might have known your voice, they knew your personality, but that chance to connect with you face-to-face really deepened their relationship. And that's what we think can happen across the spectrum, that when people who meet each other and have real relationships and real connections online, but when they come together face-to-face, it deepens it in a really exciting way. We started in 03 because we wanted our own friends to talk politics more. And so we started meeting in a bar in Hell's Kitchen. But what happened wasn't just that our friends and friends of friends came. It was that strangers showed up. Strangers who felt a little bit isolated because they were reading blogs or shouting at their computer screen, but coming together, having a drink, having a meal, made them realize they weren't alone. We started it in New York, but it really has taken on an exciting life in more conservative areas. And that's where you see the theory of how this works really come into play. In places like Spartanburg, South Carolina, Idaho Falls, Idaho, there's nothing else called liberal for miles and miles around. And in these places, people really come together and they know they're not alone. The one phrase that I heard was people get the courage to come out of the closet as a liberal.
And it not just sort of functions on a sort of like an emotional or therapeutic side, but these are people who form the bases of organizing during elections or around issues or and so on, correct?
Absolutely. There are candidates, insurgent candidates who run, who make their first stop coming to a Drinking Liberally. It's a way of creating buzz, attracting volunteers, recruiting the support they need. We actually have several Drinking Liberally hosts themselves who have started running for office. In Mid-Cities, Texas, in the town of Colleyville, our host Kathleen Thompson ran for city council. She didn't win this time, but she's going to run again. In Fayetteville, Arkansas, and Providence, Rhode Island, our chapter hosts actually won seats in the state house. They're state legislators
now.
Wow. So we now have Drinking Liberally hosts that we have to address the honorable, which is absurd.
That's funny. And I also know, not just from the perspective of the support that it gave to Air America and the way that it sort of connected people, but also even as an author, when I went on a book tour with my book years ago, we basically went from Drinking Liberally chapters around the country, and it gave the foundation of selling liberal books.
It's a great asset for other progressive partners, especially partners that are promoting something cultural, books, films. We get approached by producers and authors all the time who say, we're going to be in these 20 cities showing screenings of our new film. We don't know people in those 20 cities. Can you help us? And if we can help, we love to. Our chapters love doing it. And if we keep growing chapters the way we are, we can assure our partners in publishing and film that there will always be a progressive ally for them on the ground. I actually went on a book tour last summer, and I followed your lead. I went through Drinking Liberally chapters. So I went from bar to bar, city to city, with 538 Ways to Live, Work, and Play Like a Liberal, which was my book. And everywhere I went, it was the Drinking Liberally chapters who hosted the events, who hosted me overnight, who often picked me up from a bus station or a train station. And it really made me feel like I had a home in 34 states around the country that I made it to.
Let's talk about that book. The best ways to live as a liberal.
Best ways to live like a liberal. Well, one, obviously, is listening liberally. You should support progressive voices on radio and
Thank
podcasts.
Thank you very much, yes.
Another way that I would say is you can think about how you spend your money and how you treat your money. There's a section in the book called Spending Liberally. It doesn't mean spending a lot, but it means spending wisely.
It was interesting because Russ Feingold, in his one of the keynote speeches here, former Senator Russ Feingold made a point of talking about how you spend your money. And I think Howard Dean did as well. Specifically, Do you want to go and spend your money, you know, when you go pull up to the gas station, know who's who, what oil company you're
absolutely
paying.
Absolutely. You know, or a company like Credo Mobile that's so active in the progressive world and a Netroots nation, you're going to pay someone money for your cell phone. You could either pay it to AT&T or Verizon, who support right-wing candidates and right-wing causes and anti-net neutrality, or you can pay it to Credo Mobile, which gives a portion of your money to nonprofit progressive causes.
Right.
And at the same time, they're advocating for the things we believe in.
That's right. I mean, so there are a lot of things that we can do. It's not going to solve all the problems, I guess.
No.
But it will certainly go in some direction to adding some type of firepower behind what we're trying to achieve.
And that's the idea of the book. The 538 ways to live like a liberal aren't the only ways. They're not all the ways. But it's to start a conversation that in your everyday life you can be making different choices. And you'll come up with ideas that I didn't even discuss in the book. And you'll also find things that I don't do. It's not like these are the 538
right
things Justin Krebs does. You know, eat less meat would be a good way to eat like a liberal. And I can tell you, I was at that barbecue that the Alliance of American Manufacturers threw last night. I ate four kinds of meat. So, you know, hopefully we're improving.
Now, speaking of which, have you been to every one?
Every one.
Okay, so... Well, from your perspective, what's changed here? What's changed both with the convention and the people and the broader community of the Netroots?
Definitely since the early days of Yearly Coast and Vegas and Chicago in 06, 07, there's no question that this whole operation has grown professionally. This has been the best run Netroots Nation. I just think in terms of the flow, the schedule, everything being clearly marked. The first time, it was sort of like a group of people said, we have a barn, let's put on a show, and somehow it all worked out. And there's a magic to that, but there's something exciting about how serious and well-run this is. I think it makes it easier for candidates and elected officials to come and have an experience that they understand. And I think over the years, it just, for me, it ends up feeling like a reunion. You're getting back together with all your summer camp friends, and some of the folks that I see here, I count as friends. I see them online regularly, but this is the one time a year where I see them face-to-face.
Right. That's exactly the same. I mean, we've come to all of these together. I've seen you at each one. And it's changed insofar as that for the first year or two, I would see people, I would meet people, and I would immediately see their commenter handle
yes
or their IM handle or... and now, you know, we've been able to make more sort of, I guess, genuine... I recognize them as people as
yeah
opposed to just a handle.
As opposed to just Daily Coast names.
Right.
And
well, Justin Krebs, the website is...
livingliberally.org.
And the book is 538 Ways to Live Like a Liberal. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Sam.
I'm gonna tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight. You fascists are bound to lose. Race hatred cannot stop us, this one.
Okay, we are in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Netroots Nation 2011. I am hungover now. I don't know if I'm hungover at the time that you hear this, folks, but it's quite possible. I may never recover from this weekend here. But I am also fortunate enough to have here at the Majority Report / Ring of Fire booth one fellow podcaster and one fellow radio host, Jay Tomlinson of
Tomlinson.
Tomlinson.
Just like it's spelled.
Yes, I know.
No one gets it right, though.
Like
right
the country singer.
Of Best of the Left, where you can get the podcast bestleft.com, right?
That is right.
And David Pakman of The David Pakman Show. My guess is davidpakmanshow.com.
DavidPakman.com.
DavidPakman.com. You may want to get DavidPakmanShow.com.
I even got that wrong.
Before I go and register it and forward it to the Majority Report.
I'll do that.
So, All right, guys, I'm interested to talk to you guys. Both get a sense of both of what you're doing. But, David, tell me just a little bit about when your how many times a week you do your show, how you got into it. You're a fairly young guy.
Yeah, it's twice a week. I started when I was in undergrad in college on a community radio station. The show was terrible. I was reading news for like an hour and really not even doing that good of a job of it. Eventually, though, I got a producer and I got a little bit better at reading news. And then I stopped just reading news and started giving my opinion. And now we're doing TV and radio simultaneously. Have about 130 affiliates.
And what kind of – you do TV on TV on Free Speech TV?
On Free Speech TV, which is DirecTV and Dish, and then also on about 65 public access TV stations.
Fantastic. And, Jay, you still use this old technology of just podcasting.
I know, right? Well, it's the new wave.
Tell people about your podcast because I think regular listeners will have heard your promo, but
sure.
Tell us about it.
So the idea is that I listen to unhealthy amounts of liberal media. I pull out all the best parts and create themed episodes using all of those bits and try to create episodes that are worth more than the sum of their parts.
Right. And then at what point do you get sued?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, and I've had my fingers crossed for 5 years. So.
Right. I know. At one point, I think, you know, when I started doing this, you asked me if you could pull it, and I said, of course. But it's from my perspective, it's a great way for me to get a broader audience.
That's what I always hoped people would think.
And I think that's true. I mean, I think, like, you'd have to, but it's very enjoyable to hear the different takes on stuff, and I like it because it keeps me, without having to, frankly, with all due respect, listen to other people's shows. I can actually just listen to the highlights of that week. I mean,
right.
David, do you find that? I mean, do you consume less now that you do this than you did before you did it?
Definitely. Or I think I just get better at very quickly looking over a whole bunch of stuff. And I also depend on my audience, which is incredibly racist and anti-Semitic in great part, to tell me about stuff that I should be aware of that they like that then I can criticize on my show.
Wait a second. So, you're saying that your audience is sort of predominantly racist and anti-Semite?
The loud ones are. Not predominantly. But, you know, when I have on, like, Glenn Miller, and the first question from me to him is, who's a bigger problem, blacks or Jews? And he tells me, because I'm Jewish, the question in itself is biased. His fans come out of the woodwork
and
email
me. Who's Glenn Miller?
Glenn Miller is this perpetual Senate candidate from Missouri who always runs. His whole thing is basically whatever the issues are, the problem is Jews. And second to that, black
people.
You
know, I got to say.
You don't completely disagree.
I am not unsympathetic to that view. Certainly, I know that in my life, most of the things that are wrong are because of Jews. I could blame on Jews. be it my family members or my friends. I guess my wife is not Jewish. I would say.
You guess.
let me put it this way. I would say that I am. I would have to blame either Jews or Jews and Buddhists.
Okay.
And then that would cover just about everyone in my life who's making my life difficult.
Those are like the loudest people that I always seem to hear from. So basically anything bad that happens on my show, sometimes I might slip up and give a fact that's not completely accurate, you can count on 10 to 20 people at least being convinced and telling me it's because I'm Jewish that I made that mistake.
I don't get it. Do you think it is because you've actually, by having this guy on, you actually have developed a following amongst anti-Semites?
I don't know what it is. Jay might be able to give a better sense because he has the perspective of everything that's going on in progressive media. I mean, is there something happening on my show that lends itself more to anti-Semites emailing me?
You have anti-Semites on your show.
Oh, that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, but why would that necessarily mean that you're getting you have this anti-Semitic audience?
Well, I mean, because he posts everything to YouTube and those clips get posted to the anti-Semites websites.
Right. Okay. Which we won't name.
Well, no, but I mean, I wouldn't.
Why are you afraid of don't want to give too much promotional reach to the anti-Semites?
That's it.
Yes.
Well, the white man's gotten enough promotion over.
Let me just say this: if there's a single member of the Majority Report, I'm a Majority Report member, who stops giving money to me to fund these anti-Semitic sites, I'm going to be very angry.
That's fair.
I'm going to be very angry.
Sam, sorry. Just wanted to know, I love your show. Had to cancel my membership because I've started to listen to some really great white power.
What's legitimately
white power podcast, and I can't afford both. So.
What's the? Have you gotten weird reasons for people who cancel memberships? I have like two or three in my mind that are really bizarre.
Well, I want to hear them.
The most bizarre one is because someone thought that my producer, who says a lot of stuff he doesn't mean, that he doesn't understand, that he just doesn't even remember saying the next day, she thought that he had a problem with nurses. And that it warranted a cancellation, apparently. Let me tell you, this was a good member. This was like a high level. I was catering to this person very, very closely. And then, you know, Lewis goes out.
What do you mean catering? Like you're doing like just very. Yes, good. Folks, I know. One more show about nurses, but please.
No. I just make sure to respond to her emails right. And any suggestions, as heinous as they may have been. I pretend like I was taking them into consideration.
I never do that. What was the heinous suggestions?
For example, do a whole show about some bridge in Minneapolis, for example, that the Republicans are trying to take down because they don't agree with like the steel that it's made out of was union steel or something. I'm like, it's not really worth a show.
No. Right. That's a lot. You don't want to draw that out. What were the other reasons?
That's really the one that sticks out, a nurse thing. And there was another one where somebody thought, again, it's my producer. I think we're seeing a trend here, what it is. Someone thought my producer was anti-Hispanic. And then I had to explain, like, I'm from Argentina. You know, it doesn't make sense, but on the census I put that I'm Hispanic. And I was able to coax that one back.
Can I give you a suggestion? New producer.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I would say is, like, new producer.
He's growing on Jay, though, right?
He's grown as a person, I think.
After his anti-best of left rant,
right.
He's really turned it around.
Yeah, right.
What does he do? Is he shit on, like, nurses and
the thing is,
Hispanics?
He's just,
and
he got pulled into participating in the show instead of being a board op unwillingly. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was accepting that this type of thing might happen. Once he inadvertently implied that he believes the stereotype that Asians are bad drivers. And that I didn't lose any members, but you can imagine I had a lot of explaining to do and had to have him back off of that position, you know, which he
on
entered
air.
In it. Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, I mean, I think lesson learned there. I think what you should just do is dock his pay.
Right. Yeah.
Right? I mean, every time. Do you actually pay him?
Yeah, sometimes.
You pay your staff?
Yeah.
Well, I ask because
I do.
It's not necessarily the case in my situation.
They get paid.
I don't. Evan and Norsey. Evan and Matt, I should say. They get paid, but not really. Not in money. in satisfaction. So, now. You've been doing this, Jay, for 5 years, right?
A little bit more. I'm about to hit 500 episodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you do two. Okay, five. I can't. I don't.
We don't need to do math.
You started when you were three, is what it works out to.
Yeah.
Well, but at the time, did you do it as thinking of it as a business, or was it like a hobby?
I did it for 3 years as a hobby. I never tried to make any money at it until the economy crashing threatened my real job.
What was your real job at the time?
When I started the show, I was in California. I was like driving for FedEx, and then I moved to D.C. thinking something will just work.
Oh, so it made sense. I mean, if you're in your car all the day, that's
how I started the show because I was listening to 9 hours of politics a day anyway. So I was like, I should share this with people. But when I made the show into a job, I was doing climate change nonprofit work in D.C. And then all the nonprofits got hit hard when the economy crashed.
Right. Yeah. And because that climate change, that thing's, we've taken care of that.
Right.
That's not.
No, that's why I quit, because we didn't need to deal with it anymore.
Right. I mean, how much, once you've succeeded, there's nothing. Right. Okay. And so about 2 or 3 years ago, you tried to, and I want to thank you. You've been very, very helpful for our show in terms of.
It's kind of a selfish altruism, though. You know, expect to be repaid.
Look, you know, these days you don't even get altruism. So if it's a selfish altruism, then great.
There you go.
That's better than no altruism. And Dave, how long have you been doing your show?
Well, it'll be 6 years in August.
Oh, that's
awesome.
But,
you know, 3-4 of those years don't really count because I wasn't doing much. I was just in college.
So, in other words, you would encourage people not to listen to your archives.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a member benefit, actually. Paid
or your
members
producer.
And I say don't listen to anything before, like, 2008 because it's an embarrassment.
You don't want to do that?
No.
Well, you know, someone, I want to ask you this, because someone brought this up. I've done so many interviews now, I can't possibly remember who it was. But the there are those of us who, someone told me, was talking about that, I think it was Tom Tomorrow, saying that there's certain, you know, he's noticed that there's certain cartoons that he draws on the Daily Kos site that he gets really attacked for by commenters because they are critical of Obama or the Democrats in some way. And he suggests that there is a sort of a generational divide by people who were brought into politics and became more politically. And I'm not suggesting you are, but you say 2008, and that just occurred to me. But that people who sort of came into politics in 2008 have a different perspective on what can be done in Washington and a different bar as to, and don't remember what the Bush administration was doing and how Democrats may have let us down in 2003 when it came time for the war, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have, give me your sense on something like that.
In terms of my audience or in terms of me?
Either.
I mean, any time that I explain what I think is clearly and concisely why I just flat out disagree with the president on whatever issue it might be, people that know that they agree with me on 95% of stuff still send me hate mail, and they just seem to in a way, and I hear this from other progressive
radio hosts.
Do you
have a lot of audience? I mean, do you, I mean, it's, you know, it's sometimes, obviously, emails aren't necessarily indicative of what your audience believes. It's
email, Twitter, and YouTube. You can kind of get a sense, you know, some kind of average of, like, where people are at. And there's people that just don't care that on 95, you know, on 19 out of 20 issues, we're on the same page. If I say, you know, just if I'm honest with myself and with you, I just don't agree with the president on this, people get angry and they say I'm hurting the greater good or hurting the chances for 2012 or whatever it is. And I'm not really there to just talk about how great President Obama is if that's not what I think.
Yeah, so I have a story for this. I received an I get very, very few critical emails because I'm left of Obama, but I got this one great email. I mean, well, great. So Bob wrote in, and he was complaining that I, you know, he's like, so are you gonna give Obama any credit for killing Bin Laden, or are you just gonna attack him and help the Republicans win like you did all of last year? Thanks for nothing, Bob. And so I wrote back, and I was like, well, you know, check out my Bin Laden episodes and let me know what you think. And he was just very nice about it. And we ended up having an exchange back and forth for a while.
Bad idea.
And his no, it was good. And his exchange led me to talk about it on the show, and I talked about why I'm left of Obama and try and criticize him from the left is because I feel that, you know, not only policies would be better coming, you know, further to the left, but his politics would be better. He would be in a stronger position politically if he came to the left. And when this listener, Bob, understood why I was doing what I was doing, and he you know, he really got, you know, another thing that came out of it was he said, he asked me, he's like, please see the bigger picture and understand that in the bigger picture of things, you might help elect a Republican. And that set off like sparks in my head. I realized everybody says, please see the bigger picture, because I would then tell him, no, you see the bigger picture, because I'm not talking about this election. I'm talking about politics, you know, decades long. And then there are people, you know, still further down the line from me who say, no, Jay, you need to see the bigger picture. We all need to vote for the Green Party because the Democrats are a lost cause.
That is why when I get into those type of arguments, I say, you need to see the biggest picture.
Exactly.
And
then you'll always be right.
Right. I mean, I think that's I think that's a good point. I mean, because the different people have a sort of a different sense of what is sort of overriding,
right,
and what the time frame should be.
And so once he understood, it was great. He was like, oh, I'm so glad to now understand like where you guys are coming from. When you criticize them, like, you're not trying to tear them down. You're trying to build them up.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I have received exactly one email criticizing me for criticizing the president.
Yeah.
And the vast majority are like, I like your show because you're willing to criticize the president. And I think maybe that has to do with that generational divide.
Yeah, it could be.
Because my audience is all old.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's... I'm joking.
I know.
But guys, thank you so much for joining me. David Pakman, davidpakman.com. Jay Tomlinson, bestofleft.com. Check out both those podcasts/shows, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost but dry between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. And I'm shifted into you while I shifted in and out of you, for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lights got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. And pride.